Thank you, Chair. Oh, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members, colleagues.
Yeah, she thinks she still thinks that I'm a student because she used to be my role model at university. Now she has understood that I'm not a chair. I'm not a student.
By the way, I was her role model, not as a student myself. I was already working and a mother. So there's an age thing here. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Our presentation, as you are aware, is quite brief, and I'm going to make sure that I stick. A lot of issues have been raised already by my sister departments, and so I will zoom straight. I won't even go through it. Just as a way of introduction, and this is something we've said before, which is known, that our mandate, the mandate of the CPSI derives from the Public Service Act, which locates public sector or public service innovation in the minister. So we are, like all our other institutions, a cross-cutting facility of government, and our mandate is to entrench and drive the culture and practice of innovation in the public sector. And our vision is that of a solution-focused public sector, a public sector that's always looking for solutions to address its own challenges. And this is obviously in line with government's priority outcomes, and we partner with various sectors, health, education, safety and security, and obviously we assist them in meeting their own priorities. Move, please. Now, I just need to explain at this stage that we had a very serious engagement with the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation on the advice of the Auditor General and the Audit Committee, and so what you, the APP that you are presenting today has been revised. We actually submitted and then withdrew it and resubmitted again, and the revisions are annexed to the APP itself, which has been tabled in Parliament accordingly. Now, the strategic outcome-oriented goal is the culture and practice of innovation entrenched in the public sector. Obviously, there's a long story behind that. And the goal statement is that culture and practice entrenched in the public sector through effective and efficient innovative solutions to improve service delivery. And at this stage, I just need to say that we have a value proposition, and very briefly, what we do is we leverage innovation. And the when we refer to innovation, we're talking about ICT-based as well as non-ICT-based innovation. And we leverage that to address service delivery challenges. We have very good strategies, as we all are aware, very good policies. We have frameworks, we have templates, and where all those don't assist in achieving the outcomes, the desired outcomes, we then leverage innovation. Because innovation assists public officials and institutions to push their boundaries, to challenge the traditional ways of doing things when they are not working. And we also leverage gains that are made in the science and technology field for service delivery innovation. So we are not driving the ICT innovation mandate, because there are other institutions that are tasked with that responsibility. Ours is to use ICT, to harness ICT to achieve service delivery innovation. And we also rely heavily also on partnerships, strategic partnerships. We're talking private sector, academia, the NGOs, and so on, and even international organizations like the United Nations, the African Union, the OECD, UNDP, and various other organizations within the country. And we provide a risk-friendly environment for the testing and piloting of innovative solutions and prototypes. We also inculcate that spirit or the culture of getting departments and getting individual public officials to embrace innovation, and so that the experience of the citizens is enhanced. I'm talking about at the coalface. Now, we have two programs, and the first program is administration, which is program one. With your permission, Honourable Members, I'm not going to spend a lot of time talking through administration, which is program one, because it's exactly the same in all departments, and so it has been addressed. But we do have those strategic management, corporate resource management, and the office of the CFO, the Chief Financial Officer. Now, in terms of program one, just to touch on it, the strategic objective is effective corporate governance. And the annual target for us is an unqualified audit outcome for 2017 and 2018. And there are 9 performance targets for 2017-18, which are all focused on compliance with statutory reporting requirements, human resources, financial and supply chain management. And I am not then going to go through all these slides because it would be exactly the same as other departments in the interest of time. So to get to program two, which deals with the core business of the organization, I will indicate that this is program two. There are 3 divisions in the organization that are addressing, that are focusing on the core business. We have research and development, which obviously establishes the knowledge base in support of our program, all the programs that are addressing innovation. So they inform decisions that are made in terms of what solutions to pursue. If there are solutions to be pursued, are we sure that they don't exist elsewhere in the world so that we avoid reinventing the wheel and all of that? So that would be research and development. Then we have a division which is called Solution Support and Incubation, and that is the division that's leading the testing and the piloting, the demonstration, the replication and the mainstreaming. In fact, we facilitate replication and mainstreaming of innovative solutions for the public sector. And we stress that we facilitate the replication and mainstreaming because, remember, we work within education. So it will be the education sector that's really doing the mainstreaming. We facilitate, we support, we guide, and so on. And then there's enabling environment. I think the issue of culture and mindsets in the public service has been touched on already. And that is what this division is tasked to address. Issues of culture, getting the public servants to embrace, as I said earlier, to embrace innovation and to understand it and to be solution focused. And that's where you will find that all our platforms and products fall within this division. And when I'm saying platforms and products, I will talk to them later. It's your conference. We have one conference, we have an awards program, we have publications and so on. They fall within this, and the workshops are driven from this from that base. Now, to come back and talk to, continue on program two, which encompasses all 3 divisions and their responsibilities. Again, the strategic objective then is to improve the effectiveness and efficiency of public sector service delivery. Obviously, through our contribution would be through innovation. Now, we have 3 targets, and as they are captured here, they are reflecting the 3 divisions. One that focuses on research and development of potential innovative models and solutions, one that focuses on incubation of those innovative solutions for the public sector, and the 3rd one that drives the and nurtures the enabling environment. We just thought we should throw this slide in because it shows our integrated approach between, as it happens, between the three divisions. Exactly what I've just explained without giving a lot of detail, but the R&D, which ensures that we understand the challenges. When a service delivery challenge is brought to us, for instance, once we were told that that many people go from hospital to hospital in one day picking up the same medication and the system doesn't pick that up. We then took that challenge, we delved into it, we brought our stakeholders around one table, we found a young entrepreneur to develop a system which has been developed and finalized in Tshwane, where if a person goes to one hospital, they can, and then they go to the second, immediately the system picks it up. So we just had to dig first to make sure that there wasn't already a system existing that could be adapted, or that in fact that we were not reinventing the wheel, actually. Then they find new solutions and they make sure that we are forward looking and that we anticipate where we can anticipate challenges. The solution support and incubation, yes, they test and pilot new solutions. you will have a situation. I always make use of an example of safety and security, where they promised that they were going to roll out centers of excellence. And then the question was, how is that center of excellence going to look? And that's where we got involved with them to say, this is what the center could do. We come up with those kinds of prototypes for them. We demonstrate, we facilitate, we do a variety of things, but importantly, we have a very big and a growing program for replication. And we unearth and reward. It's very important globally. It is known that you have to reward innovators, whether it's institutions or partnerships or individuals, but you have to reward. Because if you reward, and we have seen it in the public sector as we work, that when you reward people, they can't wait for the next session that will invite their solution. So they just continue working. We have provinces and departments that we know are always trying to solve their, because they look forward to submitting. Obviously, we have requirements which make sure that issues of sustainability and replicability and others are addressed. Then learning and knowledge sharing, obviously we have a conference, it's the platforms and products, and it's not just a talk show. There's even a ministerial panel within that conference, and we get very practical innovations shared, and you already get people to hook up, link up, and go and assist one another with replication, especially those that are addressing similar challenges. And let's move. And in terms of our targets, we have 15 of them, 15 performance targets for this year to deliver on the three objectives. We have to investigate at least no less than three service delivery challenges in 1 year to identify possible solutions. We have a number of projects that we are working on doing exactly that, to make sure that, because if you don't investigate these challenges seriously, you end up dealing with just the cracks, and the problems, the challenges don't never go away. And then we have to finalize two multi-year pilot projects to address service delivery challenges. We will give you one, for instance, which is, we call it the Bekimlangeni Hospital High Volume Cataract Theatre, where they've realized, in fact, between them, specifically Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital, they have an estimated backlog of 4,000 eye operations at Chris Hani Baragwanath Hospital. And we're working with them now to establish, to put up a facility at that Bekimlangeni Hospital in Soweto to address those challenges. We actually found a very good solution in Cape Town, in one of the hospitals. Was it in Groteskier? Okay, in one of the hospitals. Refer Hospital, yes. And we've taken it to them. We're now implementing in Bekimlangeni Hospital. And again, we found that, I think that Chair has very well articulated the challenges that hospitals are facing. And again, Groteskier Hospital has come up with a solution. They've developed or established an innovation hub within the hospital, and it is targeting all the challenges that they have, and it has actually cleared a number of challenges. We're taking that model, and we are now establishing it at Beta Kowa Hospital, obviously in collaboration with the hospital. And it addresses a number, whatever solutions they have. It started with the blood, the saving of blood products and blood, a solution we found in KZN. We started with that, they've implemented that one, and they're now working on what they call the patient flow optimization, which will address the challenge of queues as well, and various other little activities. We'll package it as a model when we are done with Beta Kowa Hospital. And there are other hospitals that have asked for specific assistance, and we are providing it. And then we are also running what we call short-term pilot projects. The front office optimization for the Department of Home Affairs is one such. It's a multi-year project that we have. We're just starting with them. now, which is providing them with a management and reporting tool to identify and report and manage challenges at their service delivery points. Apparently, they are struggling to deal with issues or even to get reports on what is not happening or what's going wrong in their service delivery points. And we are working with them to come up with like a dashboard solution for them to be able to click a button and get to see what's happening where and get a report as well. And we are identifying and facilitating, we are identifying two award-winning projects, because every year we have an award ceremony. The program or the process starts in May or April every year, where we say we are open now to receive your submissions, and then we receiving starting to receive submissions right now. And then at the end of the year, we'll have an award ceremony, but we will have come out with 16 finalist projects that are really very good for various reasons from around the country. And then we choose two that we are going to focus on replicating. Obviously, it will have to be a priority challenge, and it will have to be replicable, and it's a whole process to identify those. For instance, we found a very good solution in rural Free State, which is on cable theft, just addressing cable theft. And in one municipality, they wiped it out 100%. It's a very, very good project. And you can imagine how many challenges we have with, around cable theft. So we identified it, but we need to do some investigation to make sure, for instance, that there are going to be takers, that other municipalities are going to be interested, that we replicate with them. And in Limpopo, it's a program that has enhanced, what's it called?
Collection.
Revenue collection. I think it's now, within 3 years, they're collecting so much revenue. I think it's into billions. They've really improved the system. Now, that's something that other municipalities, I'm just mentioning them to show the range of areas that we are in. And what we are doing right now is we're assessing the projects, the three that we have selected, to see which ones we're going to run with. And to come to other issues, we have a multimedia innovation center. It's a physical facility where we allow public servants, public officials, in fact, not only those, because we get academics and we get people from the private sector coming through the innovation center. It just practicalizes the whole concept of innovation for public servants. And we have a few facilities in there. You will find a facility that departments can come to. They send their processes on how they deliver services to this machine, and then they can come into the center and they can spend a day or a week just looking at the way they deliver services. They get to interrogate themselves to see which steps in their processes are no longer relevant. And so they improve it for process engineering or whatever it's called, right?
Business process re-engineering.
Yeah. So we have those kinds of facilities in the organization. They can access other solutions in one of our screens to see who has done what in the world or in South Africa on specific challenges. And then I've spoken to the awards program, yes, and I've said we end up with 16 finalists and winners, just 16 good projects. And so the awards program is a very important feeder program for replication and mainstreaming. And it is being benchmarked. We have been surprised to find that it's being benchmarked across the world, actually, including by the European Union, the OECD, sorry. Now, we also host this conference, to which we always try and invite all the honorable members to come, because we host it in Cape Town, because it gives us access to the ministers for the ministerial panel. So it's a big multi-sectoral platform, community of practice, where a lot happens. We'd like to demonstrate it, at the next conference, so that I don't take too much time here. We also have that publication called Ideas That Work, the South African Public Sector Innovation Journal. We publish two editions every year. And we do distribute it everywhere, including to our honorable parliamentarians. And we started, we also run training sessions. But before I get to that, I must say we developed a training module called Leading Innovation in the Public Service and in the public sector. And we partnered with the National School of Government to have it NQF aligned. So it is available with all their offerings. There is this module as well available. But we also assist by running more training sessions using this as well, especially when we run what we strategically established last year, which is sector-specific workshops. And we give the example of the CEOs of hospitals and clinical managers in hospitals that we brought together, all of them. In fact, it started here. We spoke to their bosses, to the DGs of health, and the HODs from across the country. And then we started in Gauteng, we've gone to Limpopo and KZN, where we brought CEOs of hospitals together and clinical managers, just to show them how many innovations already exist within the sector, their own sector, health, and just questioning them why they are not mainstreaming, why they are not replicating and so on. But it got them talking, and that is how we've managed actually to access a number of hospitals, especially in Gauteng, where it's easy for us because of financial challenges. We've accessed them and we've introduced a number of solutions with them. So we will be running four of those. And then there is what we call the United Nations Public Administration Network. And South Africa was requested to host the coordination of that portal, which includes the uploading of content for the SADC region. So they have a number of, I think, 34 regions around the world, and we are one of the regions in Africa. I think there's only three in Africa. We cover the whole of SADC. And so we continue to run that portal, and to support, to make sure that the network works for SADC, we host a regional workshop every year in collaboration with the UNDP, because they assist us with funding. And we host and we get representatives from all the SADC countries to come in, and we run, you know, to assist and prepare all of us for the achievement of the SDGs and the AU's agenda, Agenda 63. So we'll be doing that as well. And what we also do is take a number of South African award-winning projects, and none, even those that don't win, and we submit them for all these other international awards. And South Africa always gets represented well. So we'll be submitting another 8. And then obviously we participate in other platforms. For instance, we were recently, in fact a year ago, invited by what they call the Salzburg Global Seminar. And what they do is they build urban hubs for innovation. So they support cities around the world. And fortunately, we were selected to come in and make sure that they will secure the funding to establish a unit in South Africa that assists all cities with urban innovation. And there's other international engagements and partnerships, but I won't be talking to all of them here. Now, to come to the budget, I don't think I should even say a lot. It's very clear. What we have been given for 2017-2018 is 34 million. That's the total of our budget, including both programs. And this is how it will grow over the other outer years. And this is the breakdown. Compensation, 18 million, goods and services, 15 million, and so on. And if you go to the next slide, is there a next slide? Oops. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam. There you are, there is a presentation, please. Verma, Honorable Verma, then Lisona, can I see more hands, please? Okay, I take it that other people are very satisfied with the status quo. Okay, thank you. Over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I just missed of spirituality.
Oh, sorry.
Men and women, define how many you have and people with disabilities. I can't quite remember, but your HR or teach me something like this.
Yes, Honorable Judge, we don't have to say anything.
No.
But because we said to me, we want to afford you the opportunity to speak because you need to be able
to speak to you.
Way. also have enhancing partnership, because as you said in our chair, that it's not the standard, they are not the static one, it's more applicable, especially in our innovation, which is started by its nature, that probably we have to think and look at that, why we are saying that we are not saying that they must be focused and also be compliant with the expectations of the department, but also innovation, you can't limit it to innovation, because tomorrow something else comes. Which is the time we are not the standard, so the airborne will be coming, which I don't think we can do in the data. So there is something that I'm saying, looking forward, you must look at that, and also the issue of funding in a way. But I think I talk also that some complements are there, paper pushers in terms of their technology, things from here, and start put in the plant, because they're not paper pushers, or more things that we need to do with them. Also, assist them, because they can say, how can we bear, because other departments also, they do go and sort other innovations that will assist them to improve their performance in a way. They go to the private sector and pay them, instead of also using the one that other, like, i.e.,
government alone, we're not talking local government. Now, how many of those people are the people that you really need? How many are those people that you don't need at all? Because they've been defined out by the revolution, the digital revolution. These things, and in our district, compared with members, we did 34 million. This is the total budget of this department. This department that is supposed to be, you know, accelerating growth in South Africa, that is supposed to be inculcating the culture of innovation in the public service. And this is the department that is supposed to be crushing down the traditions and whatnot. This is a very aggressive department. And this department is supposed to be coming in and saying, no, but this thing is no longer works. Maybe even the platform that we are using to distribute textbooks to schools is no longer relevant. And maybe we are not investing in what we should be investing in. We are spending so much money in yesterday's technology and in yesterday's platforms, because I don't want to limit you into that, but it is the digital revolution is actually an integral part of what you are about, because most of these solutions now, they are coming in this digital form. I mean, if you look at, I always make this example of Kodak. Kodak was closed down in 2012, by the way. And all of you, I'm sure, honorable Fanebate, the camera of Kodak before, and a very cherished place, you know, it was a clash, you know. When she held it, she felt, yeah, you know, that, yeah, I'm important, you know. And guess what? Then the tablet comes the next day, and she finds the stick garment. How did I celebrate this thing? How did I treasure this thing? And think about what is happening in the public service. Have we done the audit? Because that's where we need to start with you guys. Have we done the audit of the impact of the digital revolution in South Africa's public service and administration, and in the delivery of service levels? Do we have something that we can put down and say, hey, this is what is actually happening? Maybe even the laws that we have for all your kids, they may be outdated. They may not be necessarily be speaking to this, and therefore you guys are coming with this thing of innovation. But the platform that you are introducing this thing, this innovation to us on, to me, is a platform that is, you are standing on that least developed platform in the industrial revolution, but you are trying to say, innovate. We are not transforming an X now for a chainsaw. That is long gone. We're no longer doing that. You see, it's like you guys are still trying to say, no guys, stop using the bow and arrow. There's a better way of doing it, maybe use a knife. No, you are not even using a slice, I know you are not even there. The thing is, I'm saying this so respectfully, because I am saying we have 34 million budget, but this 34 million, what can it do in this age? Because probably, honestly, if you look at our spending patterns, and if you look at even the regulations that we come up with and so forth, these norms and standards and so forth, all these things that we are coming up with, they are not speaking, you are supposed to be leading. In fact, we should be having, that should be the busiest. Busiest entity in all of them, this must be the busiest entity. When you come there, you must be, I must even get confused. Who did I see that just went there? It should be really be busy, because you are catching up with time. Yeah? Oh, exactly. We are in the platform of algorithms today, and the truth is, we are not, when are we going to catch up? And if the reason why I'm saying this, maybe I am saying, members, we probably need study as a matter of urgency, because this is a survival issue. By the way, this thing is going to threaten. I've just completed a book that I was reading, Exponential Organization, and I'm reading this book, A Brief History to Future, to Tomorrow, A Brief History of Tomorrow. You know, and what is scaring me about these things is that I don't think the government, even cabinet, actually understands where we are standing. And this thing is going to be threatening, even the PIT. Remember, in the last 35 years, in 35 years ago, the main source of revenue in South Africa came from what? Corporate income tax. And it shifted just like this. It's now personal income tax. And let me tell you what is the frightening thing to me. There is this thing of staff on demand. You have your Taxify, you have your Uber, you have all that. Those things have an implication on us. Because that means tomorrow we are not going to be having big corporates that are employing people. Which means that we should be ahead in terms of how we are going to be recovering tech. How are you going to track the person that is driving the shuttle of Taxify, his own car? Because maybe it's not even registered as a taxpayer or whatever. So this thing has huge implications for us. And we are out to chase the Uber guy. Yesterday, this Uber guy was driving a bus off Metropolitan, maybe off a Uru lady, and we were able to deduct that tax from that. But now we are no longer able to do that. And yesterday you were able to get this chartered accountant from, and you were able to get that income from them. And now nobody is employing them, everybody is using them as when they need them. Because a lot of things is digitalized. What you can do in your little thing, your little gadget, you can't do it. You don't need your own body, because now it's a matter of you just putting in the things. It's going to be, it's actually disrupting everything that you ever thought of. Given that, I am saying, have we really been able to sensitize FOSAT? Have we been able to sensitize cabinet? Have we been able to do a real audit and really something that sensitizes them? That, listen, we have this problem. You know, the way the speed of technology and the way this digital innovation, this digital revolution is going, we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. It's almost impossible. And what I am saying is that if we are not here towards that, are we going to survive this government? And I am saying, we may actually be left with our laws. And I was actually been thinking about municipalities. If you look at the speed of these gated communities, by the way, that has a huge implication for municipalities. Because before you know it, that once those people are in danger more than anybody else here. Because the gated communities may decide tomorrow that no, municipality. We no longer need your waste removal. We're going to be removing and installing our own waste. We are not going to be needing you because the school is going to be within this community. And therefore, we refuse to pay property rates what for. And they may even go to an extent of saying, no, you are no longer the renter in these services. Therefore, we don't mind paying something, but to the extent that we are using the roads, the municipal roads. But everything else that municipality are all about, we don't need to. You no longer have to cut the veggies, the grass veggies, outside our yard, because our yards are inside anyway. We don't need you. These are huge implications. The solar, the whole thing of the solar revolution that is happening in South Africa, municipalities, most municipalities, metro, they make more than 80% of income from electricity. And if these gated communities tomorrow go back to the funny thing about this revolution, digital revolution, is that you can't stop it. It doesn't shout as well. You just find it. century and you have no way, you just find it, it's in you. Before we were teaching our children, I mean, non-literate people that we thought they were non-literate, they can use their phones. They can do, it's doing something else as well in our own mental faculty. I don't know what it is. But I am saying, there is something that we ought to do, and I am proposing that we need to go back to National Treasure as this department and say, we actually wanted to even undertake a study that is going to be looking into the impact of the digital revolution, and we wanted to be looking at what repositioning is innovation. And you need to be making a case that 34 million is not going to be enough anyway, because it's going to be, we have to work with factual information. Already right now, we can't tell what in the 1 million staff members that we have, how many are still relevant, how many positions are irrelevant that we no longer need, you know? And the only thing, whereas you might find that the previous municipality has been employing water meter readers or meter readers or whatever, now they only have to go to one place in this gated community. They no longer need all these meter readers or whatever. I'm just making examples because I'm saying this is the department that is supposed to be really be well-resourced, because it's supposed to be driving something. It's supposed to be helping us to catch up with that rapidly changing times as a public service. Maybe we need to reconfigure certain things. Because even with your electricity, already in municipalities, especially in where I come from, in Devon, a lot of people are actually using, they actually buy their electricity over the counter. They don't have to go to the municipal office anymore. And that's the reality that we are sitting with, but I'm not sure if there has been a study that has been done. I would like to respond on that, but certainly to me, I think the committee will have to say something about 30 million, 34 million, it doesn't make sense to me. Because we're going to find this thing is threatening the survival of government, it's threatening our revenue stream, it's threatening all sort of things. If we are not going to up our game in innovation, we might as well keep this country goodbye in the way it is, you know, because whether we like it or not, it's going to catch up with us, but that's all I want to say. Yes, Honorable,
I just want to get on what you were saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if the department knows. If the department knows how many people work in this country, they don't live in this country, they don't pay tax in this country. I have one friend in the charge of accountants, and he has a digital office in India, because charge of accountants are so cheap in India. They have become cheap, and they have so many of them, they never have done that. So, digitally, technology is there. All of the money is up in the digital office. Technology is there, people to all the systems. They just send it back to you digitally, and you see the job that they've done. If people work in and pay people, they say, oh, well, okay. Hundreds of people who think South African work in another country, they don't think it should be imported and stuff digital. So we need to look at all these
innovation interest is really about that, and I'm glad that Honorable Dex is saying that, because you even have printers in South Africa and publishers in South Africa. They made this register here in South Africa, but they made their money outside South Africa, and they are not even paying tax. They are sitting here. But to you, they will simply be giving you their statements that are just telling them that, no, we have not made money based on what is here. Because all the stuff that they are doing, they are printing it, it gets done, everything gets done in China. Maybe only the cover will be done in South Africa, but the rest of the stuff is done elsewhere. So this thing has a ripple effect that is enormous to the economy,
yeah,
and to the survival of government, and to the way we are going to sustain the way, in fact, even the way our spending persons are not speaking to them. And that's, I think, Honorable Dex is also trying to elaborate on what I'm saying, because honestly, we have to wake up to this thing. We do now no longer need a lot of things, by the way. If you go to YouTube, there is a lot of DIY stuff there. Do it yourself. And what are the implications of that? Jobs. Something that was before a class skill. That you don't need somebody. Now somebody's just doing it themselves. That's the thing. I'm saying everything is just being defined out, and we are sitting with the department, we are giving a department. We have a 1 trillion budget, by the way. And we are saying the people that must be telling us that this to grow, to assist us, because by the way, even though you are not going to be the one that are going to be collecting the money, say the responsibility of that, but what you do is actually assisting us in terms of where are we going to be getting the next money from? What is going, how are we going to sustain ourselves going forward? How are we going to deal with the challenges that this country is facing given this digital age? So this is actually a huge department.
Thank you, Chair.
Yes, I'll say to myself.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the Honourable Members for all your questions and comments. And just, I'm sure that you don't even expect me to respond to that. Needless to say, Chair, Honourable Chair, you are spot on. This is, it's actually on top of everything else that this is threatening. It's compromising the transformation, the transformation program of government. And that is what we are trying to work on with everybody else. So we appreciate those comments very seriously. Let me start by responding to our honorable member on the HR of CPSI. There's 32 of us, the only 32, including security, cleaners, and so on. Really only, and there's only 6 SMS members. So we're very, very small. And 59% is female. 67% of SMS is female. And we have 6% disability. So that's in terms of our... Now, I hope that's acceptable. We introduced a new category within our awards program, and it is, what is it exactly,
saving,
but it's on saving government money and using it effectively. And that is how we came to draw on the one example that enhances revenue collection. We also found one in the Free State where they've assisted, they are busy assisting women and young entrepreneurs in the construction industry. It's a beautiful case study or innovation. They are going beyond to implement some of government's policies and so on. And my colleagues will give you specifics on especially the Limpopo one that I've talked to. But that's how we came to introduce that one, and that is how we even found the saving, because they are saving the Saving Blood, Saving Lives a program, where we found that they were saving in Edendale hospitals. In 3 years, they saved over 16 million, which they were able to reinvest in other, and close their gaps. And when we introduced it in to hospitals in Gauteng, you would immediately, in the first month, they start saving hundreds and thousands of money, and they're able to address, because they claim they don't have enough, they don't get enough support. I would like Lydia up here to talk to the cable theft one. Okay, Pierre?
Yeah.
Thank you. Through you, Chair.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair. Yes, this is one of the innovations where we have to partner with the other role players in the national system of innovation, and they've already secured an additional 600,000 rand for developing, because it's a very small SMME. For developing it further and then taking it to municipalities and further, and then it's more focused on municipal problems. So it's following in the distribution line more on the municipal side than on Eskom's side. But there are places where Eskom can benefit, but it's mostly municipalities. And Eskom supports us then further as well with the awards program specifically. So we've done an audit very long ago, Chair, in 2004. So that's way outdated. It was called Future Watch, where we looked at the trends, and that was, for example, the study that led to the track and trace, development of track and trace in Home Affairs, for example. Chair, we won't get started on all the issues that you've mentioned because that gets us very excited. The fact that we, for example, still use a Z83 for application for a job in the public service is just one simple example. All the issues that you've raised in terms of the challenges that we have for jobs that are losses, for that same challenge there's also an opportunity that we need to deal with. For example, just one example, solar. Solar also gives us the opportunity to outsource electricity generation to poor villages and communities. So you democratize the generation of energy. At a very low cost base. So there are all of these opportunities that departments can and have to explore. We like to call, and Health has adopted this approach as well, and it's now general, the issue of leapfrogging. Because both the technology and the innovations, whether they technological or not technological, allow us to have those that are currently unemployed to leapfrog into new opportunities. That have not been there in the past. And we see this wonderful young generation of coders emerging in our country. So when we have challenges, for example, referral or this Home Affairs system, we go to them and we ask them, because when they look at the referral system, they go and interview their grandmothers and they ask their grandmothers what are the needs that they are having. So we work very closely with them to develop these solutions. I think just on the Limpopo issue, Limpopo improved their income generation, which then goes into the provincial budget. So it was not so much saving, it was more an issue of additional income that is currently their responsibility as a province. And I think that's from my side. Let me hand to Lydia.
Thank you, Chair. Okay. The last one.
Honourable Chair, just to elaborate on the revenue enhancement strategy, the Limpopo one. What they do is that Treasury, because of the shrinking allocation from National Treasury, they decided they need to do something as a province to increase their income generation. So they put this strategy in place. What they do is that once they generate income, they find new streams of revenue generation, and they would ring fence it into, lock it into service delivery projects. I'll give you an example. They would maybe identify, say, a park where there are no ablution facilities or there are no recreational facilities. They would then ring fence, force the department to put the money, the savings that they got, into the project so that they can generate more jobs. And obviously people will then go visit their resort and they would pay to come in. They would do audits in hospitals and then upgrade their patient information systems so that the hospitals can generate more funding that would then be able to assist more hospitals to be upgraded. So it's a very innovative way of making sure that the income that they generate is actually used solely for service delivery projects. You cannot use it for anything else, except for service delivery projects, and it actually helps in the province. As you've seen, Chair, when you visited the province, that you can see the infrastructure in that province is improving because of the kind of strategy that the provincial treasury has implemented.
I think we will have to... Lema, do you want to speak?
No. No, I wanted to say when we are moving to the next one, we're going to move to the public service and administration. But just the last thing that I would really, really love, and the Nomenda to support me on this one, I would really love you to actually prepare something for us as this committee in terms of sensitizing us for the challenges that you are faced with in terms of positioning this unit of growth, which is really about transforming real service delivery. Because one of the things we are saying is that it's also the this thing of underplaying the importance of this department is undermining even our own transformation agenda. Mm. But over and above that, it's also undermining all our efforts in terms of who gets what sort of skills do you need. Let me give you a good example. I really do feel that sooner or later, we need in South Africa to be considering probably a new form of transportation, because every particular, every farmer, every, even a domestic worker, might, the skill of driving may not necessarily be now the skill for the preserve few, because you're going to be needing something that you need at that particular moment. You will get to a stage where as a person who is employing you maybe a domestic worker, you don't need that domestic worker every day. It's going to be like the same way as Uber. You can track where this person is, and that person is coming for that specific function that you want. It could be different things. Maybe we need to reskill that. So I'm saying, maybe if you could prepare something that I would like the PSC, Public Service and Administration, probably they should also be allowing you, they must take away for you, to actually take these things to cabinet. Because I really don't get the sense that we actually understand what is going on. And it's not necessarily that all these technological advancements and these innovations, they are not job intensive. They actually create new opportunities. Yeah. It's just that these opportunities come in a different packaging. They are no longer like the same as before. They are different from the way, you know, they were. The same way that photo camera went away, but then it ushers in into the production of tablets and no longer the camera. So there is always this balancing act that happens. Which means that we have to really rethink drastically. There has to be some revolution. Maybe this country needs to even, through this unit, of course, going towards like saying we need to innovate in South Africa. It's a survival issue. It's not a nice to do kind of thing. We just have to innovate all our solutions. We need to be innovating from the way we are delivering services. I now even understand that there is now Uber pharmacy. Did you see the thing? That now you don't have to go to the chemist. If you need medication, Uber simply comes and delivers it to your house. And it's cheaper. So I'm saying these are the things. It's very important. These issues we're not looking at them seriously, but it's very important. You know, when I was a manager at Standard Bank, I used to be the head of public sector finance at Standard Corporation Merchant Bank. You know, when I came in there in 1999, I'm just going to tell you about how drastic this thing is in terms of employment opportunities that they need to reskill people in a different, you know, this thing that you call it talking, you know? When I came in 1998, we probably, because in South Street, Simon Street, you know that big building at Standard Bank, we employed probably about 15,000 people. And we had about, if I'm not mistaken, we had over 500 people who were helping us with tea. In 1999, and I came late in 1998, in 1999, by September 1999, we're down to no staff at all. Because these new machines that are making coffee and so forth came in. And all those people lost jobs. And if we had strategized, we were innovative, we could have said, how best can we address this? Maybe there could have been a solution rather than sending people to the street. Mm-hmm.
but a better option. But that's because we're not as the government, the public sector, the private sector. What matters is the bottom line. It's us that are supposed to care about what are the implications of this thing for the survival of our own people. You know, and if we are also not, we are behind, we are actually condemning our people to this poverty trap forever. A person just comes to this land just to be poor and die. And that's very sad. And we need to be careful about that as the state. Hence, this department becomes important so that we are able to come up with innovative solutions. How do we deal with this challenge? How do we offset this with against that and that kind of thing? So I think that just concludes what I just said on the
top.
Culture of leapfrogging, knowing that now it's time to learn new skills and move on. And in the meantime, we are actually holding back our own prosperous agenda. You know, so I'm saying there is more to be done there. Okay, yes, Deputy Minister.
I can't agree more with you on the issues you have raised. So critical that if we don't take up our way of doing things, we'll be left behind by technology. And the issue which was raised by Honorable Minister is so critical because the school must also come on board. So in the next meeting, what we need to report you, because I'm thinking now that we need to arrange a day of workshop where all the three entities, even the four of them, will sit together and strategize and see where do we overlap as these entities. The organization will come up with their own presentations and then we interrogate. The school will also come, as you are trying to say, that if we talk of innovation and we still have the students really do the manual thing, I mean, it means these entities, they don't talk to each other. The left doesn't know what the right is doing, and yet we are under the same roof of the Department of Public Service and Administration. So I would say, allow us to go back so that we can refine all these issues which are being discussed here, and then in the next meeting, not of next week, right after the budget, then we'll be able to say this is how far I would, so that the members can also make their input, because your role is not only to oversight, but also to make input, to make us work better and improve.
Thank you very much, President. DG, we want to give you the platform to make the presentation, but in making the presentation, before you decide, I wanted the DG maybe to share with us whether there is a platform or a forum of the Public Service Commission, where Public Service Commission, the National School of Government, and the National Government School, whatever, all these names, and the Public Service Commission, do we have a place where you guys meet? Because they're supposed to be, at least maybe quarterly, you are supposed to be meeting so that you can influence each other in terms of what you are doing. We can no longer afford to wait in silos now. Maybe the DG, when he is making his presentation, if you could respond to that and comment on other issues within the first 5 minutes of your time before your presentation, thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson, Deputy Minister, Honorable Members of the Committee, colleagues. I think in terms of the last issue, Honorable Chairperson, that you have raised, there was in the past a formal structure in the Ministry, which was called MINPOT, which was basically a structure of the portfolios in the Ministry. It used to be active in the past, but became less active as years went by. Now, in our briefing meetings with the Minister and Deputy Minister, she expressed an interest in resuscitating that structure, so that there can be a platform where the Minister and Deputy Minister are able to sit with the heads of all the entities periodically, exactly for the reason that you are raising, Honourable Chairperson. Other than that, I think then we usually work on a case-by-case basis. For example, with the School of Government, we had an arrangement in DPSA where periodically there will just be meetings between the principal of the School of Government with his senior team and then myself with the senior team as well. But that was just an arrangement between us to say it becomes necessary for the kinds of things that they do in the School of Government to stay very close with the work that we do ourselves. The Public Service Commission does the same, where periodically they invite us to their plenary sessions. In some instances, it's for purposes of us sharing certain developments with them. But in other instances, I remember the last plenary session they invited us to, they said, we just want your officials to come and sit and listen as we engage around certain issues that affect the work of the Public Service Commission. Not that there is a response or a presentation that is required from them. But those are just things that get arranged on a case-by-case basis. The formal one is the main port structure that Minister Mtambi has indicated that she will be resuscitating.
I directed from my response from you. You see, you know this thing. It is assumed that as politicians we come and go, and that's true. But it is assumed that it gives you, even if we are dissolved tomorrow as parliament, whether you are not going to go, because there's a contract that you signed. Now you have no contract. Now it's your responsibility to actually ensure that these things are institutionalized. It must be about the temperament of the minister. These are operational matters as well. And don't overburden our minister. Yes, the minister is right and the deputy minister should say resuscitate that, but this is an operational matter. And unfortunately for you, you must lead from the front because you representing the institutional memory. So if these structures, they stop functioning, that's because you have not paid attention to that. It's not about the minister. Because whether the minister likes the report that you bring or not, whether you just do your job of bringing that report. You are ready for the teaching. Yeah.
When there was a mantra and was present is very strong for the end year report. You get what I'm saying? Because when these things, they say they must be discussed there, and these entities and departments, which are out of the PPSA, they must meet. Which is not some of the things that are not picking up this year, you get what I'm saying? And you can't say because I've underperformed the technocrat because the manager has been changed. No way. Government programs that don't change, they get amended when the new principal comes in. But it's within that. So I'm saying, Chair, that's a problem that you must deal with also. This is a recycling thing of a person staying, recycling slope where you know that you are secure when you are here to stay. There's a thin line between the responsibility of the minister and the teacher. And I don't think the issue then comes back, Chair, which we must raise with DPRP. The issue of the assessment of the executives and the DGs. Mm-hmm. I know DMs are going to take it up to you. I know you can send it out. I don't know if you're aware of it. It's a previous DM that I said that we must also pay attention to those people that are the committee rates and the recommendations that we pay when it's used that we should have the budget. Which means they go somewhere because also because the mentor is following it. Who gets paid to run this on this budget? And you know I like you. I don't like you. But you can't so lame and I did a pass, no way. All these men what when you say to me for 2014 is then those life structures. Sure, there's a structure that the minister was riding also which was also went to the park of the missionary thing, which is even like processes are so behind the children, because the teachers are driving, because the minister was also key.
No, but thank you so much. That's actually very important. It reminds me of something that I've been meaning to suggest to you, Mr. Lee, and Julius and Yonga. Are you listening? We need to develop a resolution tracking system so that when we are resolving on this, even if we go, those resolutions have to be tabled, and they need, in other words, each resolution must have a unique numbering. You understand? So that we are able to say, in terms of resolution, so and so that you are taken in this space and whatever, this is what it says. Then, so that we are not being, we are not used as scapegoats as politicians when decisions are there and people are not implementing them simply because, you know, and you guys, when we meet, you need to tell me how far you're going with that. But we need to develop a resolution tracking system. Thank you, DG. Over to you. Oh,
I just want to advise the DG. Know that the chain of people is correct, DG. And you better see this happen. Because you know what's going to happen. If you marry DG, you'll understand. I know a woman will remind you, because maybe a man is going to look at you, you get reminded every day. You don't just enough. You must understand the chair of the committee is a woman. The whip is a woman. The minister is a woman. The deputy minister is a woman. There's no escape.
Okay, thanks Chair. The point is taken. I think the issue of working together within the portfolio, it's just that my other colleagues are not here, they would confirm. That is actually something that continues to. It might just be that we don't always come together at the same time, but that they come together with DPSA, and then later NSG comes together with DPSA, the Commission comes together with DPSA. That's how we've been working. But I the point is taken in terms of the formal structure as well. That needs to be kept alive. I heard about it when I joined DPSA myself. It was not active at that time. It just existed in the books. And the point is taken that it needs to be strengthened, it needs to be resuscitated, and continue to be supported whether the minister has changed or not. Perhaps just a comment in terms of the issues raised by the School of Government around their structure and us forcing them to appoint two people to do one job. During the time of Minister Ramathodi, they submitted an organizational structure to the minister for his consideration. The minister wrote to them, I remember very clearly in that letter, raising exactly the issues that were raised here today, to say, your structure that you presented to me, it assumes that you're just like another government department. So take your time. Go and rethink the structure and come back. On the 20th of March, we had a meeting, myself with Professor Levine, with our respective teams to discuss the concerns that the minister had raised. And the agreement was that they would indeed do that and go and reflect some more on the structure so that when they come back, they will have addressed the concerns that the minister has raised. So at this stage, the ball is in their court indeed. And the expectation is that they are going to come back to the minister and deputy minister with a revised structure. Issues of deviations are done all the time. The minister is empowered to approve certain deviations, and people come to us, to the minister, to say we want to deviate from this provision because of the following, and they get considered on a case-by-case basis. So it's not like deviations are a complete no-no. The Act says that under certain justifiable circumstances. So people will then have to make the case to say, what do we regard as justifiable circumstances for a deviation to be approved. I think the broader issues around organizational structures, there is a directive that the minister has issued in terms of which, and it's even there in the regulations, that before a departmental structure is finalized, they must get the concurrence of the Minister for Public Service and Administration. During that process, these questions get asked, questions of span of control, for example. And there are many, many proposals that departments bring to us, which then get questioned, and the minister says, no, I will not concur with the structure. If you, for example, have a level 7 PA for each one of the senior managers in the department, and they get sent back to say, no, but this is not necessary. You can't have a level 7 PA for each director and each chief director and so on and so on and so on. And all these issues are questioned. It's not easy. It's not easy. They are very, very serious fights because you will be reminded that all that is necessary from Minister for Public Service and Administration is concurrence. But the final approval is with the specific executive authority. But that's the work that we do. The DG of Public Service Commission talked about the issue of the project they will be doing on the public service regulations to monitor implementation thereof, and giving the examples of counter offers and so on and so on. He is right. The 2016 August public service regulations have been amended to close some of the gaps that existed. Our assessment was that if you look at the discussion around wage bill, people usually focus on cost of living adjustment, and they say it's raising the cost, the wage bill. But actually, if you look at it closely, that is just one element. Two other critical elements: one, it's employment, so as you employ more people. But another one, which is what the regulations are dealing with, is the issue of policy decisions. In other words, things like counter offers. Somebody is being paid X amount, they come to you with an offer from an unknown employer somewhere, and they are going to earn twice what they are earning in the organization, and you are encouraged to retain them, and then you do a counter offer that comes pretty close to what they were going to get outside. Now, the regulations did not put restrictions on how to deal with those things. The 2016 August regulations do exactly that. So you can't just do as you please. It also deals with other issues that were not dealt with before, like acting arrangements. For example, in the past, if the post of a DDG is vacant, you'll get the chief director to act as a DDG and be paid an acting allowance. Then you'll have a director to act in that post of the chief director, who is acting as a DDG, who will also be paid an acting allowance, and so the chain. Now, so the chain continues. Now, the new public service regulations say, no, only one person can be paid an acting allowance. So in other words, the chief director who is acting as DDG will be paid an acting allowance, but anything that comes after that, it's not allowed. And these are things that add to the wage bill, but rather fatly, because the main focus is on the cost of living adjustments. But in the totality of what happens in the public service as a whole, things like job grading, I mean, the one of the things that the regulations now empower the minister to do even more is the issue of benchmark job description. Because if you look at a level 9 job in the Department of Health in the Eastern Cape and the level 9 job in the Department of Health in Northern Cape, why should there be huge differences there if those people are doing the same thing? So for many of this, what it does then, it empowers the minister to come up with benchmarks. It's already happening with corporate services post in terms of level 9 and level 11, and it's a huge fight. I mean, there's all sorts of arbitrations that we have to deal with because the decisions of the minister get challenged to say, no, but this one must be put at level 11. But it's those kinds of things that eventually increase the wage bill rather flatly, not only the cost of living adjustment. So I just wanted to confirm that in terms of what Dr. Mampiswana was saying. Allow me, Chairperson, just also to make a comment on the funding issues and cuts to budgets and so on and so on. It's true, it's happening across the public service. I don't mean to be defending National Treasury here, but I think a long-term intervention here. It's not just about National Treasury. Because if you look at the way the system works, I mean, look at what happened in the last year or two. There was the fees must fall issue. And there needs to be about 30 billion rand found in from national revenue. Now, all we say is Treasury, find that money. We are not saying to them, okay, this area here has become less of a priority. So we're taking a conscious decision that let's not focus on this anymore. For example, let's change the way in which we do RDP housing so that the emphasis is continuing with these housing schemes, but release some funds so that they can then be used for purposes of the 30 billion rand shortfall. No, all we say is find the 30 billion. We're going to be part of establishing the BRICS Bank. We need so many billions from you. And so the list continues. So what instruments do they have? The instruments they have is the budget that is in front of them, and they look at that, they say, we're going to cut, because every single department goes to them and says, but you can't cut from us. But they must find the money. The good thing that has happened recently, and I think at a particular time it might be that the minister in the presidency might do a detailed briefing on this, is a decision has been taken that there should be a process coordinated by the minister in the presidency for setting budget priorities so that you don't leave this process to National Treasury. Because if you leave it to National Treasury, that's all they have. They can just look at the budget. They are not supposed to be setting priorities, but are they not being pushed into that space where they then decide, no, we have to find the 30 billion rand or whatever amount. So we don't know the difference between small business development and center for public. We're just accountants and economists and so on. We must find the 30 billion. So we can't. So I think that process led by the minister in the presidency is going to assist a lot, so that by the time departments submit their medium-term expenditure plans and budgets to National Treasury, there is some kind of overarching guiding framework. Because otherwise, when the submissions go to Treasury, the medium-term expenditure committee that sits and looks at this has got no guidance at all. And they make those assessments based on what is available. They will tell you, if you look even at reports of the Minister's Committee on Budget, that every time funding submissions are made, in the kitty we've got X amount, but the total of what gets submitted to them is X plus 10 billion. And they are the ones that must make sure that one way or another, they stay within what can be afforded, but what guides them in that process. So I appreciate the concerns that have been raised about individual entities, and it's correct that the committee wants to elevate those issues and make sure that they are not left as they are. But in terms of a longer term intervention, I think that process led by the minister in the presidency is going to be of great assistance in my view. I take it I may go into more domestic issues now.
Something that must be repeated.
Understood.
No,
but
that's fine. Just,
yes.
I think you can go on to that one.
Yes.
The issue that Honorable Christoma is
raising is quite critical. From the point of view of saying, previously, in the apartheid, before the new democratic dispensation, people went to the private service, to the public sector, to the public service. Because it was not the salary. People in the public service were earning less. But the problem came when we started wanting to earn the same as the private sector. But there were more benefits and there was more job security and there were quite a number of even this thing. Look at how slow we are moving even with this housing scheme for public service. Those were the things where they're attracting people to the public service. It was not the salary.
Mm.
And maybe these are some of the things that we may have to revisit.
Mm.
Because we have been smacking ourselves against people who have different motives. We don't have a service, we don't have a profit motive.
Mm.
We have a service motive and that's it.
Yes.
Anyway, proceed.
Thank you. Honorable Lesoma, by the way, the court agreed with the employee in question that they must be paid the money. By the way, okay. Now, in terms of our presentation, there we go. I think what we'll do is it's just touch on the key issues because some of the things have been raised already by my colleagues. But just to indicate that the focus will be on the particular targets that we have for the 2017-2018 financial year. But we will contextualize that within the legislative mandate that we have as a department, as well as alignment with critical planning frameworks such as the medium-term strategic framework, Chapter 13 of the MDP, and so on. And then we'll talk briefly about the budget allocations. Okay, in terms of the introduction, I think just to indicate the journey that our plans have traveled, we had the strategic plan being tabled in Parliament in March 2015. We had the annual performance plan being tabled in Parliament in March this year, after we had consulted with the National Treasury and DPE. Around the issues of alignment with the different plans that that we have, somehow this PowerPoint and what is in front of me and the what is on the screen there is a slight delay. CFO, am I showing my age here? Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, yes, well, I'll try. Ask.
Maybe a couple
of
advocates
that you
have.
Oh,
no, they can
get it for you. Just get out of this one. This is the CPSI one.
Let's just close it.
Yeah.
No, it's supposed
to be the age of the laptop.
Yeah, you're right.
Yes.
So that was.
Okay. thank you very much, Chair. It was an age issue indeed that us 50-something year olds do not understand. But I think just in terms of the alignment, we indicate in the presentation that if you look at chapter 13 there of the NDP, which focuses on the realization of a capable developmental state and the work that we do ourselves there as DPSA, the projects that we are implementing are informed by this imperative. And I think a little later we'll talk a little bit more about what Chapter 13 provides for the strategic goals and so on. But we also talk about what the Constitution provides for in Chapter 10, which this committee is very familiar with and which the Public Service Commission defends very jealously in the work throughout the public service. But also we talk about what the Public Service Act provides for in terms of the role for the Minister for Public Service and Administration, that the Minister is responsible for establishing norms and standards in all the different areas, the 8 areas that are reflected there in the Public Service Act. So that's in part where we draw our mandate from. And then of course also the Public Administration and Management Act. So you will see in some of the targets that we are focusing on, they are specifically looking at the implementation, at least in a phased manner, of the Public Administration and Management Act. I spoke about the NDP. There are a couple of strategic goals that are contained in the NDP, and you'll see later in the presentation that the projects that we implement speak to specific strategic goals of the NDP. A stable political administrative interface, a public service that is a career of choice, and so on, without going through all the details. Some of them, we don't directly contribute towards their implementation, but we contribute as part of coordinating a cluster of departments that are part of Outcome 12. So they implement particular areas, departments like Department of Public Works, National Treasury on procurement issues and so on. They are responsible for the implementation. We are responsible for the overall coordination and facilitating reporting to Cabinet and the post-Cabinet, the post-SONA statements that the cluster of ministers then end up making. For the 2017-18 financial year, the targets that have been specified as 38 in number, and the reporting channels there, as reflected, is reporting to the executive authority, reporting to the portfolio committee, audit committee, national treasury, and department of planning, monitoring, and evaluation. The actual final annual report then will come around September, and the fourth quarter one for this last financial year will be coming in the next briefing of the portfolio committee. The program that deals with administration, I will not say a lot about this. It's the same as what the other entities have spoken about, except perhaps if I could just mention the issue of the second, which is item 7 there, the second phase of public administration management regulations. The Public Administration Management Act has a clause that says different sections of this act may be brought into effect at different times. Now, having realized that many of the provisions of the act require supporting regulations for them to be implemented, the approach we have taken is to develop in different phases regulations that will then support the implementation of the act. We've already worked on regulations that deal with prohibiting public servants from doing business with the state. So once again in 17-18, we'll be continuing with another phase or installment of regulations that will support the implementation of the Public Administration and Management Act. The other areas are really just corporate services type things that deal with our own reporting on financial statements, our own reporting on performance information, and so on, as presented by the other entities. The second program, which is that of policy, the key issues that have been included in our annual performance plan for that area. The first one is the issue of norms and standards. It has been raised a few times here. There is provision for the establishment of an Office of Standards in the Public Administration and Management Act, with the expectation that the department will coordinate a process of reflecting on the norms and standards that exist, where gaps exist, to make sure that there's a framework, strategic framework of norms and standards that can then be on the table. So that work will be done as part of our work during 2017-18. And in fact, it's one of the issues raised in the BRRR report that the department should fast track its work in this area of norms and standards. The second one is relating to a decision that was taken that there needs to be a review of the center of government. Over time, we have seen new departments being established. DPME was not there before. We now have DPME. And the decision has been, look at these institutions, Department of Cooperative Government, Department of Public Service and Administration, the Presidency, DPME, and so on, to see if there aren't areas of overlaps in the work that they do, and some kind of rationalization in the functions to strengthen the effectiveness of the center of government. So that is a project that we'll be focusing on during the course of this year. And then there is also this key project of consolidating the policy work on the transformation of the public of the public service over the years, so that there can be this white paper that can be put on the table to address other gaps that might still exist. We have reported to this committee before on our work regarding productivity measurement. What we did was to develop a tool and pilot it in a number of departments. So what we want to do this time around, based on the lessons from the pilot, we now want to actually get formal approval of that tool, so that there can be wider implementation in the public service of the tool that the minister will have approved. The revised public service regulations talk about departments doing organizational functionality assessments periodically. Now, there's a tool that we have developed, and we are going to refine that tool and make sure that it gets approved, so that departments are able to comply with the provisions of the public service regulations and apply that tool and do organizational functionality assessment periodically. And we'll workshop departments on the implementation of that tool. I think perhaps before I leave that program two, just to indicate that in this previous financial year, what was done in this program also was to do a study on an ideal institutional model for the coordination of Tucson centers. So that will come as part of the report that will be for presenting to this committee. That study was done with a number of recommendations. It looks at the institutional model, it looks at the funding model as well, how best to deal with funding issues relating to Tucson service centers. I'm flagging this, Honorable Chairperson, because it was also raised in the BRRR that the DPSA should fast track the work that needs to happen in this act. It's already gone to Cabinet. There is some homework that Cabinet gave to the ministers responsible for this area's public works, National Treasury, DPSA, and COCTA, and they are expected to go back to Cabinet, after which then a decision will be made known in terms of the appropriate model that will be implemented going forward. Program three, it's labor relations and human resource management. In terms of this program, we are required as part of the NDP and the medium-term strategic framework to on an ongoing basis monitor vacancy rates in the public service and to make sure that as a target, 10% is the ceiling. We understand that there is always movement in departments and that you can't always have 0% vacancy rate. But the moment it becomes too high, then it becomes a problem in the public service. So we issue reports in this area. We will continue to monitor that and report. I'm flagging that again, Chairperson, because it was raised in the BRRR report as well. The second area is that on the implementation of the SMS Performance Management and Development System. We were required to revise the system. The system exists already, but in terms of the process that we have followed, we first revised the one for HODs, and after that we have then modeled the one for SMS members against the one for HODs. So the focus will be on finalization, implementation, policy support to departments for implementation. We have done work previously on the graduate recruitment scheme. We have produced a report with options in this area. But after consulting widely on those proposals contained in the document, the feeling was that what would require to be put in place is a policy framework which then facilitates what different departments are already doing. Because if you look at departments such as National Treasury, they already have schemes that they are using, but it's just that the scheme, there isn't a broader framework that facilitates what the rest of the public service people, different departments are doing different things in this area. So those that policy framework will be issued during the course of this financial year. Part of the B333 report has talked about deepening the work we do around internship so that young people can continue to be exposed to the workplace to gain the necessary experience so that when they go out there and look for jobs, they are not told you don't have experience. So this process will continue. We work on the basis of about 20,000 per annum, not just in DPSA but in the whole public service. And periodically we get reports from the rest of the public service on how many they have brought on board and so on and so on. We'll continue with that work. We'll continue with the work on monitoring the average number of days it takes to resolve disciplinary cases. I should just indicate in response to an issue that Honorable Lesoma has raised that pool of specialists is there. It's alive, it's active. We have over 200 officials that have enrolled to be part of that pool. We continue to get requests from departments to say assign a presiding officer, assign an employer representative, assign somebody who can help with the drafting of charges. So that pool is there. I think the only thing that we might need to strengthen going forward is to be much more, because thus far we have been saying it's available for departments to use. So, but if departments don't approach you to ask for assistance, then they end up not accessing the service. And maybe the issue would be to be even much more proactive and approach other departments to say, we see from our reports that we have a higher number of people here. If the problem is capacity, here is capacity, and make that capacity, utilize that capacity that we are making available. The multi-year wage agreement that we had with organized labor comes to an end. It came to an end in March this year. So the last round of cost of living adjustment made now in March, that is the last in terms of the three-year wage agreement. So next year in March, when cost of living adjustments are effected, they will have to be effected on the basis of a new agreement. So between now and March next year, we should have concluded a new multi-year agreement with organized labor. So the issue here is to get that process going as early as possible, and there is work already happening here. Recently, Cabinet approved the constitution of a committee of ministers that will lead this process, what we've in the past referred to as the mandate committee, which will work with the negotiators on behalf of Cabinet and then report to Cabinet periodically. The implementation of the government employee housing scheme will continue. I was just looking at recent figures. Those public servants who qualify for the housing subsidy and own houses, so they get all this money, they can then apply for bonds, those who want bonds and so on and so on. The last count, there's been bonds worth about 1.4 billion that have been approved as part of this scheme for public servants to benefit from this project. Those that qualify for the money but do not as yet own houses, the arrangement was that there is a saving account opened with National Treasury so that money is saved there up to a point where they decide they want to withdraw from that account because they are ready to purchase houses. I think the money has accumulated to about 2.4 billion rand now in savings for public servants. The money belongs to public servants, and anytime they are ready to withdraw from that account, they will be allowed to do so. We have been asked as part of the NDP to look at assessment mechanisms for the employment of non-senior managers, because at the moment what we have is we have specific provisions that say once you have advertised, when you interview, you must do the following things. For senior managers, we say there must be an interview, there must be a practical exercise, then there must be competency assessment. So the requirement now is look at other areas as well outside SMS, and look at how you can assist departments in areas other than the recruitment and selection of SMS to ensure that they are credible assessment mechanisms that they can use for that purpose. Program 4, which is Government Chief Information Officer, we are required as part of the performance agreement of the Minister and the President to continue to identify areas for e-enablement. So if you look at the year that has passed, I think we worked with about 4 or 5 departments. We are going to identify another cohort of about 5 departments, working with them, the State Information Technology Agency, the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services, as the department to which the State Information Technology Agency reports. We will continue with that work of facilitating e-enablement of services. We will put in place a set of project implementation standards that are specific to ICT projects in the public service, and we'll also continue with this work which monitors and assists departments to reduce the cost of IT. One of the things that's done in this area is to facilitate transversal procurement processes where the rest of departments need the same kind of a service through the State Information Technology Agency, so that you reduce the amount of time it takes to procure, and you're also able to deal with economies of scale for this department. Last year we developed guidelines on ICT security, those policies, because the concern was that, for example, what happens in the public service is you go into a project, you get people to develop a system for you, massive system, and the committee might be aware of the things that happen, for example, with INATIS, that once the system is there, there are certain risks associated with it. One of them might be you are not aware that by getting this company to do the system for you, actually they own the system and the information. So that if you don't want to work with them anymore, they say, okay, it's fine, but this information about government belongs to us. It's this kind of guidelines, they deal with those kinds of things to assist the public service, and indeed so this new financial year will be about working with departments to support them towards the implementation of those ICT security policies. Program 5 deals with service delivery support. In this area, the project that we'll be doing, we have said before that we have developed instruments to help departments map business processes. And we have been taking samples of departments every year to work with them to help them map business processes. So in this financial year, we'll continue with that and take another cohort of departments that will continue to support with business mapping business process. The same thing applies to the second one, which is on standard operating procedures. We've developed the instruments. We take a group of departments every year, and we work with them to help them put in place standard operating procedures. And then, of course, we produce those reports on how all these initiatives contribute towards improved turnaround times in departments. Service delivery improvement plans remains a key requirement, and annually we work with an identified set of departments to assist them with strengthening the quality and implementation of their service delivery improvement plans. We will do that as well as support identifying departments. We have a sample that we identify every year to help them strengthen the standards for Batupili. And again, this is an issue that was raised in the BRRR as well. And then what we'll be doing this year also is to make the public service charter that was signed by the state and organized labor the centerpiece of most of the Batupili work that's happening in the provinces and national departments. So we've said to departments that the different forums that they have, Batupili forums, the Batupili champions, and so on, as far as possible, they must use the public service charter as their guiding tool, because it summarizes everything that is about strengthening public service delivery and putting people first, and we'll be able to report on that periodically. And then the program 6 is governance of public administration. We had previously developed a framework of delegations where we guide departments to say where you want to delegate the powers that are contained in the Public Service Act
to the head of department and to officials below the level of head department. Let's not all start from scratch not knowing what to do. This is a template of how to do it, and this is a guideline on how you do it. So what we then do annually is to work with departments that have not as yet done this work, and then to submit a periodic report on the progress that is being made. We develop a guide on mentoring and peer support in departments, and we have put it out, workshop departments on the use of that guideline. We will monitor its implementation and report on it. The MTSF also expects us to monitor the average time spent by head of department in the post, because there was a concern that there's a very high turnover rate of heads of department. So when you talk about that strategic goal of a stable political administrative interface, if there is a high turnover rate of heads of department, that is not achieved. So once a year, around September, we produce a report that indicates what is the average time a head of department spends in their post. We are also required to support departments when it comes to strengthening their internal HR capacity. We've got various instruments that we have put in place. Some of the work we do on the basis of requests we receive, but also other departments that we identify proactively based on, for example, their MPET scores. We've done work already on the disclosure of financial interest. Honorable members would recall that when the framework was introduced, it applied to senior managers only. So only senior managers were expected to disclose their financial interest. And there was a concern that it leaves out other officials at risk, such as supply chain officials who might not be members of the SMS. So this last year, the minister then identified other categories. And this new year, again, the minister will identify further categories of employees other than SMS members who will be required to disclose in terms of the financial disclosure framework. And then, of course, the work that we do with the Public Service Commission on financial disclosures, the closing date for public servants to disclose was end of April, and during the course of May, the disclosures will be checked by ethics officers and the executive authorities, and then forwarded to the Public Service Commission, and we'll be able to report on how many public servants that are required to disclose have disclosed. Other remunerative work, we've issued a directive on other remunerative work. This is slightly different from the financial disclosures, because the Public Service Act says a public servant may do work outside their job for remuneration, but only with the approval of the executive authority or the delegated authority that the executive authority will have delegated. So what we did this last year was to produce more elaborate tools to assist departments to deal with this matter. And even certificate. So if the executive authority approves, there is a certificate that they approve, and it shows that this certificate will be applicable from this period to that period. After that period has expired, you must come back so that we can assess and see if you have abided by the requirements of the approval in the first place. So we will monitor that and submit a report. And then, of course, the work on protected disclosures will be growing in the public service. There's been a concern that we need to strengthen the protection of whistleblowers in the public service. So ourselves, working together with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, will be putting that framework applicable particularly to the public service. There are other things that have become, if you like, second nature to our work. For example, if you look at employment equity in the public service, at this stage we produce a report every year, and that report gets put on the website. So this team will continue to do that, to monitor the level of representativity, the achievement of targets, and obviously taking on board the concerns that the committee has raised, that is not just about the targets, but it's about more than that. If people with disabilities, are we able to retain them? Are we able to make sure that we accommodate them and so on? So in support of this work, all the policy work we have done on the policy on reasonable accommodation and assistive devices, all those kinds of things get contained in that monitoring report that we produce annually. We are aware that through the BRRR report, the committee has raised concerns about the HR information system in the public service, that work in this area needs to be fast-tracked. There is the system, the Integrated Financial Management System, IFMS, which is led by National Treasury, but we are partners with National Treasury, and we continue to engage with them. During the course of this financial year, we should be then be able to update both Cabinet as well as the committee on progress being made with that work. That's in terms of the overall targets per program. Budget-wise, the total figure there reflects the whole vote, which means ourselves and all the entities that are here, total of 2.8 billion for the year, the period 2017-18 to 19-20. For just 17-18 only, that is the amount, the 897.144 million. But that, as I say, is for the vote as a whole, for the portfolio as a whole. This is just shows the budget, but splits it by program. So if you look at the bottom part, it shows the amount that is transferred to the entities, and the accounting officers have already presented to the committee. Ours is focusing more on the top part, 456 million, which is the total for the Department of Public Service and Administration. This next slide just then shows the breakdown in pie chart form, showing how much goes where. 27% to the PSC, NSG 18%, CPSI 4%, and so on. And this next slide also just shows the same information, but in terms of economic classification, showing how much goes to compensation of employees, goods and services, transfers and subsidies, and machinery. And then, of course, as per previous standard practice, we also include the slide on the allocation for consultants, because we have been asked by the committee in the past, so we want to see the percentage of your budget that goes to consultants. We call the consultants and contractors because in the strict sense of the word, in terms of the classification, what is it called, CFO, standard chart of accounts, there are a number of people who get paid from that figure who normally wouldn't regard as consultants. For example, the Auditor General, that's where it comes from. We appoint audit committee members, they also get paid from there, in addition to then other things that we have like travel agencies and so on and so on. CETA as well gets paid from that budget, but it shows that it's a figure that we watch closely and want to ensure that it doesn't exceed the percentages that we reflect there. That's what we wanted to present, Honourable Chair.
Okay, thank you, members. Honourable Soma, Honourable Young-Bloat, Honourable Verma, that closes my view. Thank you.
and the minister and the president, so I'm happy with that. Because also, if you cut back on the real estate, it doesn't really support any advice that they give to the department. So I'm raising that in a different form, Honorable Chair. But I want to see somewhere here, and I'm disappointed that it's not here. Because it cannot be pushed to the school, the minister and the UDM. Because we said it a long time ago. The other one, Chair, you know, if you want to talk about your reform study model, I don't know, and even when the new chair came and was promised, it's not going to be like this. Not the same that we had a long history, but that topic should be before us, remember. So that we can have a sense of also so that we can put our input on that, but also on the oversight, not just based on what we think should be the best model.
To assist the National School of Government to make sure that
then the various departments and the staff, public servants, new staff, old staff, maybe they need retraining. What do you do to make sure that they do get the necessary training so that EDHD doesn't work alone? So what assistance does DPSA provide to EDHD? And then I think the prioritized aiding services, five prioritized enabled services. What are those? I'm a bit confused about that. Saying that, and then you also mentioned earlier the DIS 83 form when you apply for a job. Is that online now? Is it only through paper? Curious. I'm not really sure. So the DIS 83, is it online? Thank you.
Okay. You know, I wish we had a sufficient time to because and as I know this is a historic thing and maybe I'm moving from the premise and I must declare up front that you know I prefer zero based budgeting. Simply because there's, I'm looking at all these allocations, and I'm sorry, it's the first time I'm sitting in this committee. But I'm just looking at some of the stuff that is there. You have labor relations and human resource management. You have a budget allocation of over 20 million for that. And yet we in innovation, something that is going to propel us to the future, we're 34 million. I just don't get the sense of this. It just doesn't make sense to me. And when National Treasury do the cutting, the cost cutting later than what they do, it doesn't make sense to me because I honestly don't know what is it that would justify 70 million? Because we're only talking about labor relations and human resource management in this department and you have that amount for the Center for Public Service and Innovation. And again, for the National School of Government, we have 160 million there. But if you look at some of the budgets that we have there, I understand that we brought the clinic policy research and analysis, but how much of that are we using every year? Every year are we doing research, policy and analysis? Because to me, it has to say, and that is why I get frustrated with this kind of incremental budgeting process. Because the following financial year, what is appropriated is 36 million. What justifies that increase? What justifies it? I'm not getting it. If we're researching something last year, what is it that we are going to be researching next year that would justify that? And yet the things that are about our survivors, they get just this kind of money. No, guys, honestly, I don't understand it. And again, we are saying we have governance of public administration. We have an allocation there of 46,839,000. I'm not sure if we've ever done really an analysis of this budget where we can actually go down item by item and get a breakdown so that we can understand exactly what is happening. Because the way I look at it, and it keeps on increasing. To me, this is not, obviously if it's governance of public administration, and that's my definition of governance, maybe it's wrong. Surely if we're doing our job right, that should be decreasing. But it's increasing. And yet we are talking about the public service commission that is supposed to be doing the work, that is supposed to be assisting us. They are the I'm not understanding this. Honestly, I wish we had more time. because this to me does not make sense, because really, I would like somebody to unpack this thing. I can see that this financial year, we have for labor relations and human resources, it's 70 million, then it goes down in 2018-19. And if this decrease the following year, what motivates the decrease? And now it's sitting at 70 million. Is it because maybe we're going to be having a lot of negotiations this year, or we have multi-year agreements, probably it coincides with that? I don't know. I need to have to find some sense in this thing. You know, and to me, this is why I think government has to seriously, really sit back and re-engineer this thing, because we may be cutting where we shouldn't be cutting, and we are appropriating where we shouldn't be appropriating. It just doesn't make sense for me. And I wonder, Uti, if the administration, and I would assume, I don't know if that also incorporates the staff, if that the also incorporates the salary there. Now, look at this guy. No. I'm seriously telling you this thing. Administration, 230 million, okay? But for labor relations and human resource management, you have 70 million. Does that make sense to you? Maybe to me, it doesn't to me. You understand, you are saying 230 million in staff salary, but you have 70 million for labor relations and human resource management. Well, how have we outsourced the human resource element? I'm not sure. What does this mean? Is it an outsourced function? Are we outsourcing human resources that we need so much money just to manage the human resources? I honestly don't understand. And at the same time, we have the National School of Government that is so clearly understanding. You have PSC, you have the Center for Public Service Innovation. Honestly, members, my view is that seriously, Gigi, we will have to, before we can actually approve this thing, you need to make a compelling case to us, because I mean, I'm not compatible with this. Something is terribly wrong. How do I explain to my own children, Ma, you went to school and you were at the bank. Ma, you are telling me that you actually, you were part of actually approving 230 million for administration, but for labor relations and human resource management, you allocate 70 million. It just doesn't make sense to me. What's happening there? That is, maybe there's an allocation for labor relations for each employee. Maybe we are appropriating something for each employee. We must have something to deal with their labor relations matters. Each employee has an allocation of how we are managing them. No, guys, I'm telling you, if you are going to be, you do this and you advocate this, you're going to be scared. Because if I were to take the staff complement today, I can tell you exactly how much, I don't know their staff complement, but if you were to divide this thing, you will actually find that the staff complement, they serious budget for each member of staff. Have our trade unions become so bad that we need this kind of money just to deal with labor relations? I don't know. Are we also anticipating that there will be costs incurred? Because we are not handling the case as well, the disciplinary case, and I don't know what the government and the but anyway, let me rest my case there, and I'm worried that in 2019, 2020, we're going to be spending over a billion, and I'm not sure where is this billion going. I have no clue. Anyway, DG, you would have to do some convincing, maybe not today, but maybe do some explanation when you give us a breakdown of this analysis, so that we know what we are doing. I'm not here natural, but step. I didn't go to school for nothing, but it, I know. No, and I didn't. I went to school because I wanted to be able to read these figures. If these figures are not making sense to me, it's very hard for me to put my thing in it. Thank you.
No, I what we'll do is indeed, because the breakdown is contained in the actual APP that was submitted, but we'll go back to the APP and specifically point, because there is a...
And please be careful, because if you come with duplications in different things, we'll be able to support them.
No, we won't. I mean, we'll be
able
to demonstrate, for example, that under labor relations, there is this body called the Public Service Remuneration Commission. Its budget is part of that, then you'll see when it goes down is because it's... Yes. And then you'll see... In fact, I think it's a good thing, because then you will see the shortages that we have ourselves as well. No! you will see under administration that because we pay for the building, it's not just salaries. Administration, it's lease. We have to pay about 5 million rand per month.
We hear you.
Yes.
We hear you.
Yes.
We hear you. But we need you.
Yes.
In fact, the more you try to elaborate on this thing, it makes it worse. because if the administration incorporates the leases and so forth, then why do we need, the 70 million for labor relations? It makes it worse.
The point is taken, Chair. Okay. We will indeed, because the information is already in the APP, but we will get... I don't know if Honourable Chair, then I should speak to the issues raised by Honourable Van and Honourable Young Blue as well.
No, please do respond to that question.
Yes.
The one that we are saying we need to respond on.
Yes.
Specifically, the area that we are talking about, because we really want to scrutinize the thing so that we can see where are the problems here, because we have a major challenge.
Yes.
There is a problem statement before us.
Yes.
DG. PSC, we feel, as the committee closely understands, we feel that the Center for Public
up experience and innovation is grossly underfunded, given the challenges of the digital revolution, and given the things that they ought to be doing. That's what we feel. And we also feel that we should be looking seriously at NSG. But NSG, we have something that we have recommended to Prosper Beam. And like, there are certain things from different departments, you know, it's a new model altogether, or a one model for NSG. But for these specific entities, we might have to look here. Yeah, and it might assist us if you can come with a recommendation of how much you've been able to identify that can be distributed.
Yeah.
It will be very nice.
I'm reluctant to comment on this one anymore because, but you will see how broke we are when we come there with the details. Mm-hmm. If I could just indicate in terms of the issues of the whistleblowing, this is part of the work plan for 17-18. So that work is just starting now, as part of our work plan for 17-18, and regarding the issue of employees and the money that is saved, it is their money, and should they resign, that money belongs to them. But through if they are not resigning, they can't just access the money for purposes other than home ownership, because the reason this scheme was introduced was that in the past public servants just got the 900 monthly subsidy, but it didn't translate into home ownership. It was just extra income. So the idea here is to have a scheme that ensures that unless they use that money for purposes of home ownership, then they are not going to access it. The registration process that we have for public servants, there is evidence that is required from them. So if they say they are not resigning but they want to have access, the evidence must be provided. And part of the process is also to help them apply for a loan with the arrangements that are in place, with very affordable interest rates that have been agreed to. Normally public servants will get, or people will get prime plus, depending on the state, but what has been negotiated at the moment has been set as prime only. So they don't have to go out and negotiate with the banks themselves. It's there as part of the deal already.
But did you just see lawyers, maybe something that you might have to think about?
I don't know. I'm thinking that we have a punitive approach when it comes to the public service. Because if this is the money that is allocated for this specific function, specifically for housing, if it's their own money too, I honestly really don't think that we should be punishing them for that, because for all you care, maybe these people are building a house in rural areas. They are not going to get the bonds. In other words, you are complaining about price monopoly capital here, but you are promoting it on the other hand. It just doesn't make sense to me. Anyway, this is left between you and I.
Yes, by the way, they qualify when they build in rural areas as well. There is a part of it called a non-mortgage arrangement that will still assist them to qualify, but they can be elaborated on during the coffee a moment. I think in terms of the NSG and our work with the NSG, the way we have assisted and worked with the NSG, our role has been from a policy intervention. So, for example, if you look at the compulsory induction program, the policy measures introduced were introduced by the Minister for Public Service and Administration through the support of DPSA, so that the policy then says that all public servants will go through this kind of process, but the National School of Government is the wing that provides the training. And there is this understanding with the National School of Government that every time where they need areas where they require policy support, then they are able to come to us to say, here, the policy could assist us better if we can do the following things, and then it supports them in that regard. But they then do the training themselves. They manage that process on their own. Without interference from the department, but that support is, as I have explained, the e-enabled services, this is the issue around identifying certain business processes in departments that can be run through the use of ICT to modernize and make sure that service delivery is accelerated. So periodically, we identify a department, we work with that department, we identify the service that they feel would benefit from this kind of work, and together with the department, then we work on that particular system, particular area of service delivery for e-enablement. In terms of the medium-term strategic framework, we are required to identify a certain number per annum, and that's why we reflect the five that is reflected here. Z83 is still there. They can download it and complete it, but for purposes of verification, all the kinds of things, because there are certain requirements in terms of the certificates that get submitted, that they must be verified, they must be certified, all those kinds of things. The submission still happens that way, but there isn't anything that stops. In a number of departments, what happens is that you can complete your application, you can send it. On the day of the interview, when they call you, they'll say, but bring originals, or copies and originals, so they're able to check that these are correct. This is just part of the process of trying to deal with possibilities of fraudulent qualifications and so on. I think the other issues, as indicated by the chairperson, we can then be able to respond in written form. I think some of the work that is of a policy support nature and is ongoing, we end up not reflecting, because it's just, I mean, if you look at things of organizational structures in departments, it's of a policy nature where departments are required to do this periodically. They submit, the department advises the minister on the appropriateness of those structures, the minister responds. The appointment of DDGs and DGs, I mean, it's a policy role of the minister that when these people get appointed, the documents get submitted to DPSA to scrutinize before the minister can go and present those things to cabinet. It's just part of the normal policy support work that we do as a matter of course in the department. And I think this was also on the advice of the AG, that on a normal day there are many things that happen in this department. But if you're going to say every little thing that you do gets reflected in the APP, you must just be cautious there, because some of the things are routine activities that you do as a matter of course because of the political role that you have in supporting the minister. Before I get into more trouble, Chairperson.
Okay, no, that's fine. Members, I want you to go and DG, by the way, when we're asking you to go and give us a proper analysis, we don't want you to replicate this. We want you to go into the details of the sub-program, because to be honest with you, we are saying exactly what is there. You have allocations for labor relations and negotiations and discipline management. But you have an allocate of this is the allocation of 7 million. This is the sub-program. I'm taking that one. But you also have another one for human resource management. Now I'm not sure why I didn't say. You know, it's like taking this thing, and you, because you want to justify each money, you want to each particle that constitutes this process. You're going to cost it so that you can arrive, we can get to a stage where we also get convinced that actually you deserve this money when you actually don't. So we need more meat into this thing. If you could do that for us, DG, but I'm also asking the members, please go and raise this thing. Because when DG comes to we need to be able to scrutinize this thing, both your own focus, your research team, to go and scrutinize this and parties as well. Because, we can't go on like this where the real stuff that you should be purchasing money for, they don't get the money, but money goes to something else. In other words, instead of working on prevention, we want the problem to escalate. We have a lot of money that we are going to, that we invest in disciplining people. But PSC is primarily there to prevent that, so that we minimize those PSC that is going to assist us so that those kind of things, you have less pressure on having to discipline staff, because I don't know how much do we pay these chairpersons to come and check your disciplinary hearing. Why then do we have such a big budget? I can see where that 9 million of yours are going to waste. Your 9 million, that's what I've taken from you. I can see where it went. It went to the discipline of staff. He loves punishing staff. Anyway, no, that's funny, right?
Saying to the CFO that what we should have done is to come to the committee with problems and say we have problems like this with public works, the building, and appeal for your mercy. And appeal for your mercy.
Monetary.
Oh, okay. You think we'll still catch our flight?
You write my name there as well, eh?
I give my strategy to my strategy.